We've qualified for the World Cup. Go and compete.
Is everyone good to go?
I think so.
Lovely.
It's, you know, who else is good to go is Marcelo Bielsa.
We said this a while ago. We did say this a while ago that he needed to start changing his tactics or being open to, I don't know, not going full pelt the whole time. And what do you know? A year on, people are agreeing with us.
He's a man who sticks to his principles, even though his principles drag him down into the mud. In some ways, you admire it. In other ways, you just laugh at him.
Yeah, pretty much. I'd go along with that.
Yeah, I mean, the form is terrible. I have to say, again, kudos, Adrian. You did call this second season syndrome at the beginning of the year. I think they play the same as they did last year. They're just missing a few key players and they haven't got the performances. It's been a real spiral for Leeds.
But, like, I mean, if your players are shit, you can't just keep playing the same way. If you don't have... Who are they missing? It's like Phillips Bamford. And Bamford are like the two main ones. I'll just stop playing the way you would with them. Just try something else. Don't just keep losing. They've lost, is it 6-0, 4-0, and 4-0 now?
Yeah.
It's crap.
They might set a record for most goals conceded in a season.
I don't know that, but probably.
But it's a crazy amount of goals that they're shipping. And, I mean, even thinking a while back, City beat them. What was it, seven goals? Was it 7-1 or 7-0? And they were 4-5-0 up at halftime. And City took the foot off the gas completely. They didn't exactly, you know, it wasn't as if like Leeds changed anything in the second half. They kept plugging on and kept just getting absolutely battered in the same areas. And I think that's probably what has been the end of Bielsa, is that stubbornness. I did enjoy the chaos that was his tactics in the Championship with Leeds. And when they first came up, it was refreshing to just see this gung-ho style of football. But there does, you know, as a manager, there does have to be a point where you do need to display more than one style of football. And that's probably what's come undone for Bielsa right now.
Yeah. It's worked to a point, and this is the point. And they need to fuck off now. That's it.
They need to fuck off.
Well, the relegation battle itself is very interesting. I mean, there's a lot of teams down there. You know, someone like Newcastle, perhaps even Burnley, you'd throw into that conversation too, are starting to show form. Whereas what I'd consider big teams like Everton and Leeds, and even like Brentford, who looked like after 5-10 games, looked like they were going to stay up, are free falling. Has anyone's opinion changed on who's going down?
Well, I never thought Burnley were in much danger anyway, even though they were rock bottom of the table. It's because they had like 5 games in hand and they've never been as hopeless as Norwich and a lot of other teams have looked. Even though Sean Dyche, I mean, they play Burnley football, whatever. It's fucking, you know, it's caveman football, whatever. You're always going to have teams like that, that sort of play that way. There'll never be great teams. Even the best team at caveman football, Atletico Madrid, are not a great team. They're the best caveman football team of all time, and they're not great. And Simeone's probably going to get fired or something, and they're shite this season. But Burnley have never looked as woefully out of their depth in all the time they've been in the Premier League, at least in the past like 20 years or whatever, as Norwich or Newcastle looked or Leeds look now. So I never thought they were in much danger.
Yeah. I forget who I even picked that would get relegated, but I think we all said Norwich, and I think we all said Watford. And then we all had kind of one random choice. And
United.
Yeah, I think some people said Burnley. I think by the looks of it, it'll be either Brentford, Leeds, or Everton just on the table, because I think Burnley are, I think like you said, I think they're getting there. Brentford are shit. Again, like you said, start of the season, they were kind of interesting, but now they're just shit. If Leeds don't get good players back or change the way they're playing, I think they'll go down, probably.
I think it's huge, but it seemingly always never really comes down to, but it might this year, just on how close it is from even like Leicester down, Leicester in 13th, again, with a few games in hand. They're only 2 wins away from the relegation zone. It's that tight. And the difference in goal differences is the big thing. Leeds minus 31, Burnley minus 8. Like minus 8 to me is a goal difference. It's kind of mid-table, let's be honest. You know, they're not shipping many goals. But I don't think Newcastle are out the walls yet. I mean, they are winning games, sadly. But they're not even doing it well. You know, they are just picking up the wins that they were getting, you know, beaten in the start of the year. And it has all been via the transfers they brought in, as much as we like to slag them. And Joelinton's now a midfielder, so you know, Eddie Howe's working wonders.
Yeah, I know. We all want them to go down, but I don't think they will, unfortunately. It would be amazing. It would be a real triumph.
It's going to be just really frustrating now, though. If they do stay up, then next year they're going to buy to compete for the Europa Leagues and the Europa Conference Leagues. And in 2-3 years, they're going to have enough firepower to be basically taking a Champions League spot off United and Arsenal. So,
well, United don't deserve a Champions League spot. So
it's true. They don't. Fucking they West really Ham don't. Have taken it off them.
Well, Newcastle, in the next 3 years, if Newcastle stay up, they probably will overtake United. Yeah. I can't see it not happening. They're free. United are free falling.
Yeah, they're finished.
Current form, I think Newcastle are fit to overtake United, to be honest.
United are, right now, at the time of recording, 2 points ahead of Arsenal, but Arsenal have 3 games in hand.
So, that feel good really
well. United's fixtures are pretty shit in coming up. I think they play like, hang on, what's United's next fixture? United play City away next. They play Spurs at home, and then they play Liverpool away.
Wow.
That's their next three. And they play Atletico in between.
That's a bad 4 games. Even Spurs aren't that good, but they're still like, what, 7th with a few games at hand. So not looking good for Man United. I didn't realize that they've played so many games. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's them and City that have played the most games, or one of the teams that played the most games, yeah. The fewest postponements.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably point to that at the end of the season or something, but in truth, they've just been pants. I mean, Watford have gotten 4 points off them this season, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
No. And they're like near the bottom.
In all honesty, Ragnik has them looking really cohesive. He does. He's got them, you know, they're just missing one or two pieces. I think he's on the brink of figuring out this puzzle. I think they played very well against Watford. They played very well against Watford. And they can hold their heads high, I think. There's a lot to be optimistic about in this team. They have a good core of young players. Rashford, Sancho, Greenwood. you know, there's optimism for the future in this team. And even Harry Maguire, he's still young enough. He could play for another 10, 20 years at Man United.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Luke Shaw. Yeah, you know, I think United, their future is bright. And Ragnik is doing a better job than people think.
The real bad thing about United is there is no one to bring in. There is, like, we kind of laughed when Ragnik came in because, well, I hadn't heard of him. He's obviously not doing the job.
Casual.
So they'll have to get rid of him. And then they're talking about Pochettino, who's been a flop at PSG. He can't manage the dressing room there, so why could he manage the dressing room at United? On about your man from Ajax, go on, give him a go. Let's see what happens. Who else is there? Big Sam, I genuinely I can't think of another decent manager that they could bring in. I have no idea. They must be stumped. Oh yeah, they could bring him in. Why haven't they brought him in? He doesn't want to go?
Probably not.
Probably. So yeah, it's very desperate times. It's it reeks of Liverpool like 20 years ago.
It does, but you know, a phoenix rose from the ashes there, and United, I think they've gone through their dark night of the storm, you know? I think they've weathered it.
Hard disagree.
They went through hell. They went through hell these past few years. This United fan base.
Down, down. They will probably finish around 6th or 7th, if they're lucky.
I think they'll finish 4th.
Ahead of Arsenal.
No, Arsenal will finish 3rd.
Where are Chelsea finishing?
Like 7th. No, they'll be fucking liquidated when Abramovich gets all his assets seized.
That's true. Mm. Yeah. Mm. They could be in trouble. Well, they're not, actually, because he's just fucking jumped ship.
Yeah.
It seems he's jumped ship, but he's probably still going to earn all the money.
I hope Chelsea know what they are. I hope they understand what they are from all this.
Maybe we can join a Chelsea group and tell them what they are.
I think they know. And that's the worrying part, is they know that their fan base is filled with right-wing neo-Nazis. They support.
That might be the worst thing, yeah. Like, they understand. It's not... They're not even deluding themselves into thinking they're a football team. Like, they know.
Yeah. This is the day before the League Cup final, and whatever happens, Liverpool are the true winners, because Chelsea shouldn't
absolutely
have ever won anything.
Like, there's an asterisk next to everything Chelsea have won since Abramovich came in.
Yeah.
The scum asterisks.
Yeah. The history will look back on this and spit on anything Chelsea have won.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember
we'll all get together and spit on Chelsea's fucking trophy hall in the future. It should be a holiday.
We can. The pandemic is over now, so we're able to spit on Chelsea fans.
Yeah, yeah.
Freedom Day has a whole new meaning. Yeah, but just remember back when Liverpool as a club got a load of stick about, you know, laying people off during the pandemic and stuff, and how a lot of clubs didn't. Liverpool got a lot of stick for that. And I mean, ahead of the final tomorrow, would you prefer a club that takes advantage of government payment schemes or be entirely funded by Russian blood money? Like, what are the levels here?
Probably not enough is being made out of it. I think Liverpool deserve more credit as a football club, full stop, to be honest.
They do. You know, you're dead right, Adrian. It's high time that Liverpool were recognised as the guardians of football.
Well, I did say, if it wasn't for Klopp and Liverpool, City would be 13 points, now 16 points ahead in the league, I think.
Yeah.
And about to win their 5th Premier League in a row.
It's very true.
And they probably would have won all the others much, much sooner than they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Your Gandalf coming over the hill.
Yeah, Gandalf the White. Yeah. And they're that, whoever the bad guy is in Lord of the Rings.
I think it's Voldemort.
Sauron. It's Voldemort.
Whoever said they should turn The Hobbit into 3 films.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. Fucking hell. But it was a good decision by them, because I went to all 3, so they got my money. So,
fucking sake.
Big fool me.
I saw the first one. I enjoyed it. It was fine, like, it wasn't great or anything. But the second one, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And it ends with a cliffhanger, which is, I hate when movies do that and end with a come see what happens next in the fucking film or whatever. And movie 3, I don't remember a fucking thing in movie 3 other than Legolas, who was there for no reason, jumping around, hopping on rocks and like zero gravity bullshit Matrix stuff. I hated it. It nearly ruined. It made the Lord of the Rings films look worse.
Yeah,
the dragon was cool though.
It was.
For
5 minutes on screen.
But yeah, no spoilers intended. But oh no, spoiler warning, I should say. But the end of the second movie I thought was class because there's a big dragon and then it cuts. I was like, oh fuck, how are they going to deal with this dragon? And the dragon is dead within the first 5 minutes of movie three. And they just keep going. It was fucking stupid.
That was so sickening. The fact that he was done in 5 minutes. Like, it was... It made the second movie look like a fucking joke. The dragon looked like a joke. Yeah, I was like, what the fuck's going to happen now for the rest of the fucking movie?
Yeah, yeah.
And did nothing happened.
Did you both watch it in the cinema? Or did you watch it? No.
I did.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, yeah, watching it in the cinema was... That's the thing. Sequel cliffhangers in the cinema is the worst. Like, if it's on Netflix or on Amazon, you could just watch the next one and it's like, great. But like 2 years to see the next one.
And it's so deflating. It's such an anti-climax at the end of the movie. Like, The Matrix 2 was like that as well in the cinema. The Matrix 2 ends on a cliffhanger. And it's like, well, it's not even clear what the cliffhanger is. Also, all movies are a mess anyway. Did you see the fourth one?
No, I didn't yet. No, I'm interested.
Fuck me.
I've heard really bad things.
What a mess. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Oh, no. Because it's like multiple timelines and stuff, right? Is it that he's revisiting to like get the memory back and stuff? I don't know.
Jesus, I couldn't even explain it yet if I wanted to. But... And I'm someone, I even like some of the Matrix sequels, but the fourth one, holy Jesus, like, it was like a joke. It was like they were playing a big joke on the audience, or that it was like deliberately insulting to the audience, which it almost is, because I can give you some spoilers for it, but like, within the story, well, maybe I shouldn't give you spoilers. I'll just let you see it for yourself and you can make up your own mind. But they nearly poke fun at the fact that they're making another Matrix in it.
That's what I heard,
ridiculous it is. And it's like, okay, fair enough. And then they make a ridiculous Matrix movie, which is, it looks worse than the ones that came out 20 years ago. The fight scenes are like something from a TV soap opera. Like, that was one thing in the Matrix. They were always good action. No matter, even if you didn't have a clue what was going on, they were cool to look at. This one looked like someone shot it on their iPhone and it was like two lads outside a fish and chip shop battering each other. Baldy McDonough did the choreography for Matrix 4. It was a load of... I can't even describe how bad it was.
Wow. A damning review.
Back it had before. Maybe... It had 2 minutes of interesting stuff in it, like all the other Matrix sequels. Yeah. Anyway,
I actually like number two. Yeah, there's some unreal action bits in that. You know, when they're on the freeway and when he fights the like 1,000 Agent Smiths. I thought they were cool moments, but number three kind of lost me.
It lost me till the end.
Number three lost yet. It's number three lost yet.
I watched them consecutively at Christmas. All right. And it is the best way to just go, you know, back to back to try and piece the stuff together. First one's great. Second one, like Adrian said. And then the third one I thought was just really confusing until the face thing happens. And then I was like, oh, okay. So that's the whole theme here. But even then, it was a bit of a reach, you know.
Number three. First one is a fucking stone cold masterpiece. It is so perfect. It's unbelievable how good that movie is. The second one, I like a lot of it. I like 70% of it. There's some really stupid parts. Really stupid parts. Number three, I hated how Neo's hardly in the fucking movie. Like, the main characters are a bunch of people in Zion fighting the machines. Like, endless, endless scenes of people shooting machines, like a video game. I thought it was mind-numbingly boring. And then the ending's just a big anti-climax. Mm-hmm. Number four, geez, I don't... Okay, I've already said my piece on number four. Number one is incredible. Number one is so good.
Yeah.
me and Emma watched, because she had never seen any Matrix. So we watched like number one and all the sequels, and we watched the Animatrix. Do you ever hear of that?
Yeah, I heard of it, yeah.
that was pretty good. There, it's like just a collection of like short anime films set within the world of the Matrix. Some of them were good, some of them were poor. Like anytime you watch a movie which is a bunch of shorts together, like some were better than others. It was decent. And we were actually excited to watch number four. And at the end, we were just like shaking our heads at each other. Like, there's this. I want you guys to watch it now, nearly, to just talk about it and see what you guys say.
How long is it?
Fuck, it's not that short. Matrix 4.
It's like
Matrix
4. It's definitely 2.5 hours. Every movie.
It's two and a half. It's two and a half, exactly.
It's like that. That's what they aim for. Like, remember in the 90s where you'd have a nice 1.5 hour movie?
I know.
And then in the last 10 years, it's gone to 2 hours and now it's 2.5 hours. Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I'm going to segue this back to football, to be honest. Okay. Trying to think of like a trilogy.
Arsenal is the Matrix. Liverpool is the Matrix 2.
Mm.
Man United are Matrix 3. Chelsea are Matrix 4.
Yeah. I wouldn't have gone that way, but I'm happy with your last two picks. Your last two picks are peak. Yeah.
Arsenal, a masterpiece. Well,
a flawless masterpiece.
We mentioned last time we recorded, Flynn, about how much we'd admired the work Arteta has done. And I suppose since you were the last on the podcast, like Aubameyang has left and all the rest in Arsenal are looking pretty decent. Are you feeling positive?
I'm feeling very positive now. My problem, even under Emery and even under wins under Arteta previously, his like season and a half before this, because it's kind of crazy. He's been in charge a while now. He was appointed a few months before COVID hit. So Jesus, yeah, he was in charge before the COVID even began. It's kind of crazy to think about. That's like what, two years, 2.5 years?
Yep.
Yeah, it's probably his third season, is it?
Yeah, I think so. But under him and Emery, even though sometimes they won games and like people thought looking on paper, oh, Emery's having a good run. Oh, Arteta's got the team playing well. They weren't. They were playing really, really, really bad every week. It was unsustainable. Every win was lucky and every loss was deserved. That's all you can say about the past few years. But this season, it's the first time where they've been dominating teams and they've been battering teams pillar to post, and they've been by far the better teams in so many games ever since the North London Derby. I'd say the last, what, like 4 or 5 months ago now, ever since that game, Arsenal under Arteta have looked very, very, very good, and they have the youngest team in the league. So they're only going to get better. The whole core of the team, like Saka, Odegaard, Ramsdale, Tierney, White, Gabriel, all these, Martinet, yeah, they're all fucking like 25 or younger. And they're only going to get better and they're only going to reach their prime. But they're still lacking someone to replace Xhaka. And now they're lacking a center forward. But if they can get those two signings, they could be a really, I know people don't want to hear me say Arsenal could challenge for league. They could challenge for league next season. This team is improving so much week on week that I think a world-class midfielder and a good striker, you're looking at a very, very strong team.
I would agree. I was just thinking, yeah, because it's midfield. I probably couldn't name three Arsenal midfielders right now. You've got Xhaka. Do you still have Elneny?
Yeah, he's still there.
Is he playing?
No.
Okay. So who's the other guy playing in midfield?
Partey.
Oh, but who's the other guy that you got in?
Oh, Sambi Lokonga.
Lokonga, yeah. Yeah,
He hasn't been playing that much.
I mean, I really like Arsenal and I like seeing them doing well, and I think I agree that they do have a really good team. And even I like seeing Lacazette do well, because seems like he's always in and out, but when he plays well, you know? But I can't help but feel like there was a huge difference when we played Yi in the League Cup in terms of quality, in terms of like...
That's true. That was a bad, bad game for Arsenal.
Was it?
They got badly shown up against Liverpool. Liverpool have shown up Arsenal like every time they've played for the past 5 years. So
I think we have to play again in the league coming up. So I think that might be an interesting one.
It might be. I think just the way Liverpool play is just the worst thing for Arsenal to play against, because one ball in the back and fucking Manny is in and it's just, bang. And that's it.
But he's made some fucking cutthroat decisions. I mean,
that's it. He's Aubameyang, figured out half the team.
Leno, all these guys. We were all like, Leno was one of the best keepers in the league, and he fucked them off and got in Ramsdale.
Aubameyang was not washed up, and he's proving that now because he's at Barcelona and he's scoring every week. And people are like, "Well, Arsenal missed out," and so many Arsenal fans would even say it. Oh, Aubameyang was completely finished. Aubameyang was never completely finished, even this season when he was having an appalling season, because he was missing sitters. And to miss sitters, you have to be in that position in the first place. And that's what he's always done, is he's just been in the right spot at the right time, a bit like Ronaldo. And he just finishes really well. And this season, he hasn't finished well. And people have been lambasting him and saying he's finished as a player. He offers nothing to the team. But all I saw was someone who was just, not having a good time at the club, and his finishing wasn't very good. But one change of scenery and he's at Barcelona and he's scoring goals for fun again. He was never completely finished as a player, which is, it's sad that he had to go, but Arteta, he wasn't getting on with Arteta, and he was turning up late, and Arteta was just like, nope, you're out. To Aubameyang, who was like, carried the team for two and a half years. Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's the thing I think I admired the most, is that he hasn't let reputation or what seemingly was the Arsenal problem for a while, was the end of the Wenger years and the Emery years too, was that those cliques and that toxic, toxic groups of players. Arteta, as a new manager, brand new manager, I mean, I'm sure he learned... he learned the trade of being a manager from his coaching days and his assistant manager time. But to come in, and then within what we were saying there, it feels like a long time, but really in the space of football, he's turned around an entire squad in 2.5 years in five transfer windows. And you're looking at a group of players that seemingly enjoy playing together, have respect for each other. And I'll repeat a point I said the last time, but the reactions you saw from the players when they were hard done by against City, and when they beat Wolves, when they felt like everything was against them, shows you a good team. So if nothing else, Arteta has achieved that.
That Wolves win was so huge to me watching it, because they scored late. They scored in the 83rd minute or something, an equalizer, and they were pushing for the whole game. They got the late equalizer, and as soon as they get it, two or three players run to get the ball, and they're sprinting back with the ball to the midfield to put the ball down to get a winner. And I was like, fucking yes. You're like, it sounds weird to say, but not that long ago, you would have just been like, oh, we got the draw. Thank God we got the draw. But here it's like, fuck the draw. We're getting the win here. No matter what, we're better than this team, and we're gonna beat them. And they did beat them, and I was so delighted that it happened. I was like, "Yeah, fucking yes!" I'm finally confident watching this team, and this team is confident in itself to go and get a winner at the very last second, pushing to the very last second to get the winner. I loved it. I fucking loved that result. That's my favorite result in years.
And that's good. That's good to hear. I think both Wolves wins this year have been pretty big victories for Arsenal, especially considering where Wolves are at the table. I think that we give the players and Arteta a good bit of credit, and rightly so. But I don't think there's any coincidence that in the year that DT gets put behind bars for the scumbag he is, that this has turned around.
Mm. It's something to be said that AFTV was, I guess, the origin point for this kind of online fan football vocal group of supporters with their social media presence, maybe. Are they responsible for all the fucking horrible shit social media football stuff we see today? Possibly.
No, very much so. I mean, you look at the, what do they call it? Is it the Saturday Social on Sky Sports? And fucking hell, like, how many weeks can they put out tier lists for stuff about football? It's the laziest content I've ever seen.
Oh, God. Whoever was hired for that show, some higher up said, we need a show that appeals to social media crowd. And you can tell because the title of the show had the word social in it. And whenever you see a show that has the word social in it, it's someone who's probably 60 years old, never used a fucking iPhone in their life, just says, get me that social media crowd. And they pick the name. It's the same with, like, on RTE. They have, like, I forget, it's probably called a social as well. I think it's just called a social. It's like a social media-based talk show or some shit. It's these people who don't understand how the internet works trying to get an internet crowd. And they're like, what do people on the internet like? They love lists, tier lists. Let's fucking spam endless lists of, like, top 10 useless bullshit for next 5 years. Oh, we have like 2 viewers. Why is that? Because everyone's online instead of watching TV to see content that's made for online audiences. Anyway.
Yeah, and everything...
I don't even mind the lists and the tiering things. I actually think, you know, for a quick 5 or 10 minute video, it's fine. Problem is they're trying to make it into a full program that's like 23 minutes or something. And they'll get on, like, they won't get on, like, Jamie Carragher or, like, you know, someone useful. They'll get on some cross-eyed fuck who I've never even seen before to get him to rate, like, the best managers in the Premier League. It's like, I don't give a fuck what you think. That's my
I think the podcast title has written itself now. Put him under pressure, social. There we are.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes down.
Yeah. The podcast tier list. And with everything has to be ranked in green, yellow, or red because no one has the attention to know otherwise.
Yeah. What does red mean?
Arsenal?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they do like A, B, C, D, E, and like green, yellow, orange. It's like, what does A mean? Oh, it's in green. That means good. Okay, got it.
Oh, man, it's just the worst. And then they're like ranking managers at D, and it's like... It's like established managers. Oh, yeah, but they haven't really been up to much this year. It's like how does that rank correctly? Anyway,
they rated what was it? Academy graduates recently, and like 3 teams didn't have an academy, so they just like why would you pick that category then? Like
they put Vieira in the E tier of managers in the Premier League, and I'm sorry, no matter how many doubters Vieira had this season, Palace has sat in 11th. It's not been great, but it's been pretty.
I mean, yeah, I thought you were going to get relegated.
Exactly. Everyone had this written off to start like by November, and that's okay. Yeah. It's understandable. The club was, you know, in a very tight crossroads. But yeah, E-list manager when we're sat in 11th, and they have the likes of fucking Brendan Rodgers then in like B when he's...
Hey.
A point behind us. Well, look, we won't circle back on that. That's been put to bed, Flynn.
That's it.
We made sure to say it on the podcast that you didn't join, just in case.
Uh-huh.
Cool. For football fans, I guess going to Anfield is on bucket lists, and it's, you know, it's known for having like a good atmosphere. And Adrian, you would have gone to a game recently in Anfield. How about you talk us through that?
Mm. Yeah, it was the Liverpool Norwich game. It was 3-1. It was fucking amazing. Oh my God. I tried to like keep my expectations level, you know, but it was way better than I could have ever thought it would be. It was so much crack. They came from a goal down, like went in at halftime and was like, oh, that was a bit fucking shit. Like, because they weren't playing Alexander Arnold, so I was like, they're not going to be able to create as much. It's going to be really shit. But went out at halftime or after halftime and was like, yes, all right, come on, they're going to do it. And then conceded like within a few minutes. And it was like, oh my God, I've come all the way over here. It was the weekend of the really bad storms. So like our flights were delayed. It was just a really miserable trip. And I was like, we've paid all this money, come all the way over here, and they're going to fucking lose. But then there was just this like collective, I don't know. It was like Anfield was like, well, this can't fucking happen. And it was just like, it's just like, I can't explain it. It was just like the players were like, come on, come on. And like Anfield was just like, come the fuck on. You can't do this to us. And they just went up a gear. They went up like three gears. Because I looked at the highlights after, and you don't really see what happens between their goal and the first Liverpool goal, but it was just a total change in dynamic. And they were hanging on. They were like hanging on by the skin of their teeth. And then eventually Mane scored like a kind of overhead kick. I don't know if I could call it a bicycle kick, but it was an overhead kind of volley. And yeah, fucking pandemonium. I was like, yes, I've seen a goal at Anfield. Who gives a fuck after that? But then there was just this inevitability of like another goal. Like you could see Norwich just crumble, just absolutely crumble, having played so well, actually, for a lot of the game. And 3 minutes later, Salah took that fucking... It was assisted by Alisson. You can go back and watch it, but it just makes mincemeat of like three or four players, including the keeper, and just rolls it into the goal. And it was like fucking ecstasy. Like, I've never experienced emotion like it, going from so low to so high in such a short amount of time. I was exhausted after it. But definitely if you're a Liverpool fan, do whatever you can to get over. Even if you got to spend a lot of money, because I did have to spend a lot of money, but I couldn't put a price on that experience. It was fucking insane. And it was only Liverpool Norwich. Like, imagine if you were there for a big Champions League game or something. It's insane. Also, I was told, well, my perception before I went over of Liverpool was that it was like really rough and really dingy and really shit. Dublin is a way shitter city than Liverpool, like 100 times over. Liverpool city center is really nice. There's a lot of homeless, which we don't really have here, but they're right, like, I don't know, can you call them, they're like nice, they're like respectable, they're not like rough. They're like, do you have change? And you just say no, and then they're like, all right, have a good day, it's no big deal. The outskirts of the city is like kind of a bit not as nice. It's a bit more derelict and there's a bit more rubbish, but like there's rubbish on the streets of fucking Dublin every morning. So this perception or this idea that it's like rough or unsafe or something, I definitely didn't experience that. So there's a flight from Cork. It's only 50 minutes. You can get tickets, fucking go, because I'm definitely going to be trying to go again. It was insane.
I'm delighted.
Yeah, I know. I said this to you in person, but like probably the best match experience you can get. Didn't feel like it at the time, I'm sure, but when you're at home, like, I suppose Liverpool chasing the title against the whipping boys Norwich, to go a goal down and turn it around, even though at the time I'm sure it wasn't as pleasant, just for an experience, like that has to be what football's about, right? The full spectrum of emotion.
Yeah, and at the time, Spurs still hadn't beaten City, so it was still like a 6-point gap. So it really didn't feel like it meant all that much. It was just this feeling of you're seeing one of the best Liverpool sides. You're seeing Salah score this amazing goal. You're seeing, you know, and it was at our end as well, which was really nice. It was just, yeah, like I said, whipping boys Norwich, but it felt like the biggest game in the world at the time. It was just something, and it felt like we were part of it. It felt like we were to nearly tank for that comeback, which is really weird because you never feel that when you're sat at home, because you're supporting them, you're shouting at the TV, but players fucking don't know you're there. Whereas when you're actually there and you actually, you know, whatever, it's like putting the other team down and bringing your team up. It's that feeling of like, we've actually helped with this. So then, you know, the clap doing the fist pumps at the end, really, you feel like you're part of it. It was actually such a fucking come down after was the worst thing, because I was like, now what? Then we just go back to the hotel and go get some food. And all night, I was just like, that was fucking amazing. Also, a little tidbit was on the fucking way to Anfield, which was also a disaster. I fucked up and said we'd walk and we went the wrong way and it started pissing rain. But anyway, on the elevator down, we just hopped into the elevator and Sonia was wearing a Liverpool jersey, but I had my jumper zipped up. And the guy next to me, it was a 10-minute elevator ride. Guy next to me, I didn't really take much notice. I just noticed his jacket had like a little bird on it. And I was like, oh, weird. And then as he walked out, I got a glimpse of his face and he was kind of looking at Sonia and laughed, like kind of just chuckled to himself and walked out. And I was like, that was fucking Ozan Kabak, who was on loan at Liverpool last year, wearing a Norwich fucking jumper or whatever, because he was playing for Norwich. So he was obviously staying in the hotel and he must have thought like Sonia was a real shit Liverpool fan for not recognizing him.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, take that, Ozan. You don't need the ego. You're a 22-year-old millionaire, so.
If he was thinking that, I mean, he needs to, you know, take a real good look at himself. You are a nobody, son.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't even know he was at Norwich either.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't even play. He doesn't even play.
Imagine not even playing for Norwich.
And oh, that's, dear. Everyone thought Liverpool were having a, you know, oh, you know, they missed one or two players. Liverpool had fucking Ozan Kabak at the back last year. And they're like, well, they missed one player. It's like, yeah. You substitute Van Dijk for Ozan Kabak and you're probably going to lose some games.
Who was the other centre-back they bought at that time? They bought Kabak, but they bought
good
someone else.
Question. Very
Ben
good
Davis.
Question. Ben Davis, yeah.
Not the Ben Davis.
No, not the Spurs Ben Davis. He came from Preston, I think, and now he's gone on loan to Sheffield. Is it Sheffield United, I think? Yeah, he's not up to much. He's actually still only on loan, so they'll have to get rid of him.
He's 26, yeah.
I don't know, did he play one game? He might have played one game for Liverpool, but...
I don't think he did. I'm looking at his stats here now. No, he didn't play a game for Liverpool.
Wow. Literally 2 million down the drain, like...
You're...
Error. It's only 2 million. Fuck it.
That's it. Klopp wipes his hate, his tears away with 2 million.
Sure, that's probably what we got for the Super Cup or something. It's grand.
It's hard for me to get used to. Like, I'm just on his Wikipedia page here, and it's like, Ben Davies, footballer, born 1995. And I'm like, oh, geez, he's still fierce young. It's like, no, God, he's 26.
Mm. I know, yeah. Yeah. And that's sure, footballers now are born in like 2002 and stuff, are they?
That's what I was going to say is that Villa brought someone on today, and I just try to see if I can find the year he was born. But like, but yeah, 19. So that would be, 2002?
Is it? Yeah, 2001, 2002.
Christ, like.
No. 2002, 2003.
Yeah. And the World Cup in 2002 was in Korea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Japan and Korea, yeah.
Yeah, oh, Japan, Korea. Sorry. Not to offend anyone.
It was a shared World Cup.
It was. So yeah, it's pretty mad now that there's players that are born in the 2000s in the Premier League.
Yeah, they'll be joining our page where we talk about the good old days of the 90s and just pissing themselves laughing at us.
Back in our day, handball used to mean when the ball hit your hand, not your fecking sleeve.
Remember dial-up? You couldn't use the phone and it made mad noise.
In fairness, even when I think now that we used to tape things, and if your parents changed the channel while you were asleep, it would tape whatever they had changed to. So you could be like, don't change the channel because I'm taping this movie tonight. And they'd be like, yeah, whatever. And then they'd change to like The Late Late Show, and you'd have like a 3-hour taping of The Late Late Show. You'd be like, Mom, why did you fucking do that?
I know. Yeah. In some ways, and you'd always get the tails and the tops of like, something else. If you even recorded something perfectly, you'd always get the arse end of the previous show and the beginning of the next show. And as a kid, like my dad recorded a load of like the Godzilla cartoon on VHS for me, but it was on it was on like first thing in the mornings on, I think it was TNT or some weird channel. I don't know how we even got it because we didn't have Sky. How the fuck did we even get this?
Yeah, I can't even remember. I remember something like that. It was like we had Cartoon Network for a few years as kids before it went over to Sky. Yeah,
something like that. But like at the start of every one of these, because TNT after like 9 o'clock, it turned into like not an adult channel, but a grown up channel, like where it showed like actual movies, like old movies or whatever. So I would always get the arse end of black and white movies in my Godzilla VHSs, and they scared the shit out of me because a lot of them were like these old detective movies where someone dies at the end. It's like the loud opera music as like this shot detective wanders through the streets and then collapses and stuff. And years later, I would see these movies myself and it would all come rushing back that I saw this ending. It's like the worst case of deja vu you could experience, where it's like this thing that you scared the shit out of me when I was four. I saw it and it's like, oh my God, this is that thing. This is where that scene is from. And it's just a really weird feeling to see that, because I used to think that I dreamed it or that I didn't even remember it until I saw this and it all came flooding back watching this as a kid. It was really strange. VHS was great.
I mean, it wasn't, but...
Yeah, it was a pain. But then Sky Plus came and changed the world, right? Press the red button.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
It's amazing how quick I got, like, just left TV in the dust. Yeah. As a kid, I was like, if my parents asked, could you give up TV for Lent or something? I'd be like, I couldn't. I couldn't go 40 days without TV. Now I could go 40 years without watching TV. Like, I wouldn't even have to think about it. Like,
but nowadays, even if you're watching a physical TV, you're probably not watching like traditional TV on it. You're like hooking it up to the internet to watch YouTube or Netflix or something. Like, it's not even close.
I wish it was more standard to have a keyboard, like a wireless keyboard for the TV now. Because the fucking effort of typing is on a TV screen. A, B, A, looking, you know, to type anything in.
Yeah.
It takes for fucking ever. Why aren't keyboards standard now?
Or just voice recognition on the telly.
You're so fancy.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm fucking the modern day Steve Jobs. Let's just put it that way. Because I stink and don't wash.
Wow.
You know that, right? He didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I heard that he used to watch employees in the canteen, and if they put salt and pepper on their food without tasting it first, he'd fire them. Because he was like, that just shows that, you know, you don't have the mind to actually test things out yourself. You go on blind belief in like the expected social order or some bullshit like this. He was a nutter.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether we want to breach the topic, but it was quite enlightening and warming to see the response of some Ukrainian players and some Premier League players today with all that's going on. The Russian invasion of Ukraine. That's going to have probably more than we think knock-on effect on the world of football. We're already starting to see it with the Champions League final being moved. And, you know, Poland, I think, was one today saying that they're not going to play their playoff game against Russia. Crazy bit of business going on there now.
Russia. These lads have been up to no good for the best part of 300 years.
It's a tricky one. I don't know. Probably over time we will see the knock-on effect it's going to have. Sure, even I was talking to Fanny's grandmother today and she was like, I need to get loads of flour. And you get loads and loads of flour now for baking. We were like, what do you mean? She was like, because I think Ukraine is like a huge producer of grain and flour. She was like, there's going to be a big flour shortage now. I was like, I don't know if that's true or not. It could be absolutely true. And there's going to be all these little things now that we're like, where's all the fucking flour? It's like, oh, well, the flour came from Ukraine, so we don't have that anymore. But like, what else comes from Ukraine or from Russia now that we're not going to be importing in, you know? So
Ukrainians.
Certainly Ukrainians, yeah. We'll probably have a few of them. But
that nearly sounds like the kind of thing you would say in to break an awkward silence, and you just fuck it up like, oh, need to buy a good bit of flour now because of Ukraine. And you're just there like, what are you talking about? And she's like, you know, because they make flour in Ukraine.
But maybe she's just lost it. Maybe she was just saying words that I...
She's tapped, yeah.
...put together in my head. And I was like, really? Maybe I should Google this before I talk about it on the fucking podcast.
Yeah. He was probably like, Adrian, stay away from my flowers. You're standing in my flowers.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, you've lost it. You weren't talking to, like, Sonny's grandmother lives in, like, Australia or something. You were just talking to someone on the road.
Walk to the light, Adrian. Walk to the light.
Well, fuel and flour prices are seen to rise because of the Ukraine crisis. It's on fucking Google. Therefore, it's gotta be true.
The world is built on oil, gas, and flour. Is it the self-raising one or not? Because that's a big difference.
Fuck, I don't know, man. I don't know the last time I used flour for anything in my life.
Sure, did you not, during all the lockdowns, did you not once try baking?
Once, yeah, I did.
Yeah?
I did, actually. I baked a cake. Birthday cake, yeah.
For Sonia?
Yeah. For me, for myself.
yeah.
Yeah, I baked a cake, and actually I used flour to coat some venison for a stew.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Good. Those are probably the Where'd two times
Where'd you get
times
the venison?
My cousin shot a deer.
Holy shit.
Yep. Actually, it's happened twice. He's shot two deers, and my
intentionally.
Dad Yeah. What do you mean?
You said it happened twice.
Well, same bullet. Heard twice.
He did it twice.
He's shot two deers on two separate occasions. And my dad used to be a butcher, so my dad went down and fucking just butchered the shit out of it.
And did your dad used to be a butcher?
Yeah, young.
Fucking hell, he's had some life.
So they just had too much venison, so they gave us some. It's good. Good shit. Recommend.
Very gamey, isn't it?
Yeah.
I had it for the first time a few weeks ago, and it was so rich, the sauce I had it in, and it was like a cream and tomato sauce. It was way too much. I was wishing for a little light green salad after it. It was too much.
And kangaroo, actually, you can get that in the English market, and that's really interesting as well, because it's like steak, but it's really dense. So you cook it like a steak, but for a shorter amount of time, but you let it rest for like 10 minutes. And it's like, I don't know, I could probably have like two steaks and be like, okay, now I'm full. I could have a little bit of kangaroo and I'm like, oh, stuffed. It's really weird.
Crocodile is pretty good. Because it's like fish steak.
I'd love to try that.
Yeah. I think the only place I've seen it is Scally Super Value in Clonakilty. Voted Ireland's number one. Something. But yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. I actually looked for it there before. Since we were in school, and I think it's gone now. But I'm always on the lookout for it.
Yeah.
Anyone knows where to get some crocodile? Let me know.
I seem to think as well, the Woolshed, because their whole thing is the Australian theme, isn't it? Or they might actually be an Australian chain. I don't know. I think they have it there, or they had it there. Yeah. Kangaroo, definitely.
Can I just ask, do you guys think Liverpool are going to catch City?
I only just saw the City highlights just a few minutes ago, actually. Of that handball, that fucking handball that Rodri did. How was that not a penalty? Yeah. In what universe was that not a penalty?
It's the sleeve thing, though, is it? That's probably the argument.
Oh, God, I don't know.
I think also, I saw somewhere, and I don't know if it's true, but
Richarlison was offside on the build up. Don't know if that's true or not, but that's why it's also there.
Okay. I literally only just saw a clip of the handball,
but yeah.
To me it just looked like stonewall.
Yeah. If they're saying it's not a handball, I mean you could surely just grab the ball between your two upper arms and run it into the goal then, you know?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean
it that's the thing with me with that penalty shot too, is like, yeah, if that's the rule, that's cool. Because I remember do you remember the start of last season when everyone was getting a penalty for it? But those were like ridiculous. They were just getting like point blank, you know, shots straight at them and not moving their hands out of the way.
Rashford was running into the box and flicking the ball up at the defender's hands, and Bruno would get the penalty.
Yeah, yeah. This one, he had no player around him. He had his back. He was facing his own goal, back to every player, and he misjudged the bounce and just guided it back in with his forearm. Like, completely handball. But I mean, that doesn't really answer your question, Adrian. In the short, I would say yes. From what I think I've seen of City recently, it's been iffy. They're still in the Champions League, which Pep definitely wants more. I'd be safe enough to say. I'm sure he wants both. But if Liverpool win, and this could get so outdated so quickly, if Liverpool win tomorrow or win the final, that momentum carry them into the City game. City game's actually still quite a while away. So it's not as if like it's going to be make or break in the next couple of weeks. I mean, it might. But they're not playing each other until April, I think, which is really the tail end of the season.
Yeah, it's like five games away.
I think Liverpool will.
Flynn?
I think there's a good chance they will. Klopp's a great leader, and he'll fight to the end. And in many ways, I feel like Pep doesn't know what he's doing. And the City players are cowards and mercenaries. Liverpool's players are warriors. So... to me, it's a matter of time. And I hope City, you know, get liquidated.
I think a lot depends on the Liverpool City game at the Etihad. And it probably depends on the squads, like if there's injuries and things before then. Liverpool, I think, have maybe like a slightly tougher run up until then. But if Liverpool can win that game, it's all to play for, I think. But a bit like you said, Kieran, if Liverpool win the League Cup tomorrow, and whoever's listening to this will know by now, if Liverpool win, momentum is on their side. And if they don't win, then do you know what? It's only the League Cup. Like, who cares?
Yep.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure. But the Liverpool City games have usually been season defining. So this is a huge game in April. And yeah, I think both teams are going to be into the next round of the Champions League too. So it's not as if like one's going to be without a distraction or have more of an advantage of a fitter, more rested squad. But then who needs rested players when you have Mo Salah, who could probably just not ever stop playing football like every second of the day, and he'd probably still be class.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy bit of business. But this is the thing, like, I mean, if Liverpool get an injury to Fabinho and Trent, say, in the next month, that's a huge issue. Whereas if City get an injury to Laporte and De Bruyne, not a big deal. That's fine. They got like four other players to take their place. That's why it's so impressive what Liverpool do, challenging them every fucking year, in my opinion. Imho.
Yeah. If anything, they're underrated.
Yeah.
Hugely.
Mm. Yeah. I think so. Sure, no one thought they'd be in the title race this year based on last year.
Yeah, that's true. It's very true. It's a testament to the spirit inherent to the club, which you can't buy.
You can't buy it.
No. You can't.
But you have to experience it. Yeah.
That's it. Klopp is priceless. He's invaluable.
But you know,
he's bigger than the club nearly.
Shut the fuck up. But not to think too far ahead, but I think his deal ends in 2023.
Maybe. Oh, you're 24. Fucked.
And it like exactly what I said about United. Who are they going to get in? Who the fuck do Liverpool get in then? Probably Stevie G, really, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Boys for that, and he's not done great.
Well, he hasn't done great. How dare you? Bullshit. I think he's done quite well. I think they're kind of grooming Pep Linders, who's the assistant manager, to take over from Klopp, because he has basically taken over the team for the Carabao Cup games, and he does all the press conferences and stuff. So he was like the under-16s manager when Klopp took over, and now he's risen the ranks to be like assistant manager. So I think they're saying it'll be him.
This is the thing with Klopp, like what a selfless act that is.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, a pure leader.
And in that Norwich game that I went to, they switched from a 4-3-3 to a 4-4-2, and he came out afterwards and said that was Pep Linders' idea. So he's already given credit. He always, you know, dishes out the credit. He never takes it all on himself. He's very humble, yeah. Man.
Yeah, it's a true sign of a leader.
Yeah, it is. And we've definitely got all listeners turning off by now after this. So,
yeah,
great achievement, guys.
It's Ronaldo is fucking horrible. He's a shite player at the moment.
Shite person too.
Well, we all knew that. Like, come on, should be in fucking prison.
That's it.
He's the Chelsea of football players.
Easily.
Why should he be in prison?
Now we know why.
where to begin?
Well, I thought he was very good to like give to charity and all that kind of stuff. And
oh, I mean, God, they all say that.
He doesn't go to the books. US. He doesn't go to the US for a reason. He specifically doesn't go to Las Vegas for a reason.
Well, look, yeah, he's 37. He's past it. I can't believe we were worried about him at the start of the season. Remember that?
Yeah.
No, I was not worried about this guy. He was never better than Messi.
No, he wasn't. No, but he still scores a shit ton of goals. But even those, I'm seeing the stats of his Champions League performances this year, and he's got like, I don't know, 10 goals or something in the Champions League. Like, who gives a fuck? He's just not that good anymore. Sorry, lads.
But they all count for nothing.
Just aren't that good anymore. He just perfectly personifies Man United as a club, really.
Yeah. Old, on a decline, disgraceful, etc. I think that's a wonderful note to end the podcast on.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else I need to talk about.
I mean, I don't hold much hope for Man United at all.
Ooh, no. Spurs, anything to say on Spurs, considering Conte was going to quit like 2 days ago? And then he's not.
I hope Conte keeps pulling his hair out and brings Spurs back to where they belong. Because they've had Mourinho. I can't even count how many managers they've had since Pochettino. But none of them can make it work. They're getting worse year on year on year. They're getting older. They're losing good players. They're not losing good players. Players are turning to shit. All their signings have been flops. Harry Kane is probably on his way out the door. Hyung Min Son is their only good player, and he's the dirtiest fucking player in the league. He should never be allowed to play football again. Terrible player. Yeah, I hate Spurs.
Yeah, a real piece of shit, I hear as well.
Son, yep.
Real piece of shit.
I think him and Lloris are too, right? Because I know they went at it on the pitch, but the more Spurs games I see, the more times I see Lloris like really getting in the face of people like Dier and that. They don't seem like they're a happy bunch. And I mean, who would be? You're playing for Spurs. It's literally the definition of not making it.
They had their chance with that Champions League final and they bottled it. That's
oops.
It.
Oopsie. Oh well.
What?
Oh well.
What are you on about?
They had their chance and oops, they didn't.
All right, okay. Just sounded like you were saying something else there. I was like, what? I thought I had made a whoopsie. I thought I said something I shouldn't have.
All right, no.
Oh, yeah.
You're free to speak without judgment.
Yeah. Fuck Spurs.
Grant, we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
God, okie dokie.
Yeah. Fuck Spurs.
Up Chelsea.
Ukraine.
Yeah.
You'll never walk alone.
You'll never walk alone.
You've been listening to the Put 'Em Under Pressure podcast. For more of our content, make sure that you follow us on YouTube, Spotify, and Facebook. Outro music.